Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of On to the Next One. I bet you're thinking to yourself, why do you have an On to the Next One right now? There's nothing to matchmake. There's no UFC card this weekend. But we told you, we have some bonus content for you, and because we recorded last week's show in a bit of a kerfuffle, if you will, I'm sitting there recording in the hotel lobby. You could hear the elevator music in the background from the lobby. I had to bolt real quick so I couldn't address any of the questions that were submitted in terms of matchmaking on my end for UFC Vegas 45. I said we're going to make it up to you, and that's what we're doing. Part two of Ask AK and I Anything. So we solicited questions for you guys to ask myself and the co-matchmaker, the best friend, the Prince of Positivity, Mr. Alex Cayley, who we'll introduce right now. AK, how are you, my friend?
Mike, can I just say, while it was a bit of a kerfuffle, as you mentioned, and you certainly were missed during the listener, you know, the normal listener suggestion phase of the podcast, I really enjoyed getting to kind of do that by myself, getting to fly solo. But you were missed. It's good to have you back. And you're right. Yeah, you know, we owe our loyal listeners more programming. We certainly don't record enough. It's not as if there's a UFC card every other week now. Every week on a good month, it's every other week where we can have some breathing room. But look, it's the holidays. We want to spend time with people we love. And who do we love more, Mike, than each other? One. And then our loyal listeners.
The Otno community is one of the, we're definitely a family here because
so powerful.
We support each other and we fight with each other pretty much on a weekly basis.
Yes, this is correct. Yeah.
So like I said, we solicited questions. I am shocked because when we do shows like this, it's always like a worry of mine that we're going to get like one question or two, or no one's going to submit anything. But AK sent me an email last night of like some of the questions that we got. I was like, oh my God, like this is a lot of questions. So I appreciate you all very much. AK, I'm sure, feels the same way. And how we're going to handle this is through this list of questions, we're just going to run through as many as we can. We're going to do about 45 minutes of this. Some of these will be short. Some of these will probably be a little bit of a back and forth, but we're going to do the best we can. And that's it, AK. Are you ready? Are you ready for this?
Full disclosure, I directly harassed some people on Instagram and via email. So thank you, everyone who responded via those outlets. I mean, not everyone's on Twitter, right? You know, we solicited on Twitter. So I did it for the community, not because I was like, oh, I don't think we'll have enough questions. I knew we'd get enough questions, Mike. But just in case, for people who only use Instagram or don't use any social media, you know, you gotta let people know. So thank you, everyone. I apologize for stuffing your inboxes and DMs.
Well, there are some very good questions, and we're going to start with one of our most consistent submitters of On to the Next One since the very beginning of this show, 72 episodes down, Jay Steiner, AK. And this might be the most interesting question that I've ever been asked in this MMA space. And here is the question, and I'll start with you. I thought about this for a long time last night. If you could change the result of any fight in MMA history, which fight would it be and why? How did you sort of lay out the blueprint for this?
Because
this is very difficult. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was an easy one for me. So I'm going with the very obvious Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor. I'm a huge Jose Aldo fan. I was already working in the MMA industry when that fight happened, and that just, I think I was. Yes, I definitely was. What year was it? What year was that? That was
2016.
Okay, yeah. So I was definitely already in the industry when this happened. And I was pretty confident that Aldo was going to destroy McGregor whenever that fight happened. You know, it seemed like they were on a collision course for a while, even before the fight was booked. And I was certainly like a fan of McGregor, as most people were, but definitely I thought the hype had like gotten out of control. I thought, you know, the matchmaking was favorable. And nothing against him. I was like, good. You know, he got the matches that he can win, and that's fine. That's how prize fighting works. The UFC was doing a great job promoting him. But I'm like, the buck stops here. The buck stops here with Jose Aldo. And obviously we had the 13-second knockout, one of the greatest championship, I think, finishes ever. I know it's a long time ago, but I mean, people to this day still talk about it, as they should, because I think Aldo was just, again, was a wrecking ball up until that point. And then it changed everything. It changed our sport. What makes this answer somewhat complicated for me, Mike, is that I don't know if I would have a job if it weren't for the explosion of Conor McGregor. Like I said, I was already in the industry when this happened. But I don't know if I can speak for everyone and every outlet. I do feel like more outlets started needing MMA people as people like, obviously, Ronda Rousey first, Conor McGregor started coming up. So I kind of like the boom of McGregor and the continued boom after that win, as everyone can guess, was very beneficial to the MMA media as far as coverage goes. So while I would change it as a fan, it probably worked out better for me in the long run that did happen, and Conor McGregor went on to, again, just become an even bigger star afterwards. So kind of a weird answer for me, but I still would change that one. Maybe you and I would never have met if a horrible thing to say.
Wow.
I know, it's a horrible thing to say if that had gone differently.
But see, since we had met, I had a very good feeling you were going to go with that fight.
Okay.
So I eliminated that right away, because that seems like, I don't know if it's the most obvious answer, but yeah, it seems like the first answer that pop up. So,
a lot of people, yeah.
So I dug deep. And the first, I was like, just go with the first thing that pops in your mind and just like then start thinking about it. So the first one I thought of was Holly Holm knocking out Ronda Rousey. And the reason I thought of that was because we have this discussion. We're asked about this a lot. Like, why isn't Amanda Nunes a bigger star? Imagine if Amanda Nunes was the one to just bolt Ronda Rousey in the first round. Mm-hmm. Like, not like as a secondary, not as the follow-up to Holly Holm in the return where Ronda didn't seem all there. Like, what would that have done to Amanda Nunes' career? Because Holly Holm, to her, and let's be honest, Holly Holm is a very nice individual, but she's not the most, like, I don't know, she's not the most entertaining fighter of all time. Like, when she's on the microphone doing interviews, like, she's a very professional, athlete-oriented interview, right? Like, Amanda's a little more interesting with her interviews, but she didn't get that same rub that Holly got. So I thought about that. But then the foil to that is that we take away two incredible moments. We take away Nunes beating Rousey later. We take away Miesha Tate beating Holly Holm. Like, those are two incredible moments. So do I want to sacrifice two, maybe three moments for one? I said no. Then I thought about, because, and I feel like this is going to be a theme for some of these questions, and you'll agree with me on this one, AK.
We're on a whole journey already. First question, Mike.
I thought about Brian Ortega versus Frankie Edgar, because that was a brutal knockout, and both ended up getting title shots anyways, and we didn't need to see the knockout, because both would have gotten title shots no matter what. But that was not my answer. My final answer, I'm going with Cody Garbrandt becoming the UFC bantamweight champion against Dominic Cruz, because we are now in the midst of one of the all-time falls from graces in the history of this sport. And if Dominic Cruz just went out there and did what most people thought he would that night, went out there and won a five-round decision, we are not having these Cody Garbrandt conversations right now. We're just talking about Cody Garbrandt, an exciting fighter. Could he get back to a title fight at some point? Like, he lost to the GOAT. He lost to the bantamweight GOAT in Dominic Cruz. No shame in that. There's no shame in that. But then he had one of the all-time greatest title performances of all time. And to have to try to live up to that for the rest of his career, almost impossible to do. So I think just from a personal standpoint, maybe a psychological level, I'm going to go with that one. Because if Cruz just went out there and did what most people thought he would do, we would not be having these kind of sad Cody Garbrandt conversations. Like, oh, does he fight John O'Malley? Oh, we don't want to see him get knocked out anymore. Like, what a difference four years makes, right, AK? I mean, so I'm going with that one just to be a little outside of the box.
Michael, Was it not better to burn twice as bright than twice as long? I mean, you know, I don't think Cody Garbrandt would change. Actually, all fighters would say pretty much I wouldn't change any moment in my career. So I guess that's not really a fair question to ask. But yeah, gosh, it's crazy to think how the arc of his career, because it spiked up so much. I mean, it's not like he, when he got the title shot, it wasn't deserved. He was like the number one contender and people were like, oh, okay, you know, but you're right. I think a lot of us picked Dominic Cruz too, and I'd have to go back and check sort of a lot of the media outlets, but I would imagine it's probably 90% Dominic Cruz, 95% probably. Yeah, you're right. It has led to some sobering conversations, not just about Cody Garbrandt, but sort of, I mean, specifically him, but just fighters in general. You're right. How to match make them after hitting such a big high and then clearly hitting a slump. Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he would have gone to 25 sooner, and maybe he'd be the flyweight champion right now. It's just so crazy to think about. But now we have one of the best 30 for 30s in MMA you could possibly make at some point. So, AK, why don't you ask the next question?
All right. I have to kind of ask you. I hope you have an update on this. Our pal Loctagon. And by the way, Loctagon, we will, I think at some point, I don't know, maybe the upcoming episode or episode soon, we will need your spreadsheet of the accumulated Otno points. I don't know what we're going to do with it, but I know you put a lot of work into it. So we'll take a look at that and do something about it. Loctagon on Twitter asked, any update on the life of Jimmy Flick? They were truly inspired by his story, and we're kind of always hoping you do a Where Are They Now on him. I mean, my impression was he probably does, like, one of the reasons he went out is he doesn't want to be doing these Where Are They Now features. But Mike, I don't know. You spoke to Jimmy a bit, and what's your read on where he is in his life now?
Okay, so how that first question was a journey, this will not be that. I have a feeling Jimmy Flick and I will be conversing in 2022 at some point, early 2022. There's really no update from our last conversation. Mm-hmm. He said he was working on a book. He is, in fact, working on said book. It's come a long way. I think it's actually been like made print at this point. I don't think it, like, from what I understand, the last I talked to Jimmy, this is probably like 2 months ago. He said early 2022, the book would be released. So he's been working on that. Still watching the sport. As you can see, if you follow him on social media, he still makes picks for fights. He's still very much into watching the sport. He's just not competing in the sport. And he's focusing on the book and trying to tell his crazy story in hopes to help people. Like, if you want to go back, watch my interview with Jimmy Flick right after he announced his retirement. It's basically the same. What he planned to do is what he's actually doing right now. So that's the update. I haven't really wanted to bother him for interviews, but once the book is about to be released, he is going to jump back on me with me, and we'll have a where are they now sort of conversation. So in terms of when that's happening, TBD, but it's happening.
There's a little preview though, but I mean, his book is almost ready to come out. That's a pretty quick turnaround, because his retirement. When did he retire now?
God,
first half of this,
May.
First half of this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me May 8th.
May 8th. So he.
Oh no! Before that, he was scheduled to fight Francisco Figueiredo. It was in April.
Oh, okay.
April 10th was the day he actually retired.
But he's turning this book around in less than a year. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, George R.R. He needs to get some pointers to George R.R. Martin. Hey, this guy's been working this book for like 12 years or whatever. Maybe help him with that get Winds of Winter out there. Ask Jimmy Flick for some tips on cranking out that work, George. Come on.
Yeah, I think he's just been focusing on it for the last 8 or so months. So good on him. Good question though. Joga Bonito on Twitter. Is it fair to say, AK, that 125 is the fastest growing women's division in terms of talent? And with the addition of tough added to it for 2022, will it surpass the strawweight division as the quote unquote best female division in 2022? Again, overall talent, not just the four ladies on top. Your thoughts on flyweight contending with strawweight as maybe the most talent laden division in the UFC, or at least in 2022?
Is that the dealio? Was that the report that there's going to be, it's going to be flyweights for the next season of Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah, that's really one. That was one of them.
Well,
that was
one of them. Women's flyweights and
middleweight, I think. No. What was it? Hold on.
It is. Men.
Right, you answer
it,
that.
It,
while
it,
I
it is men
that
and women. It is men. One women's division and one men's division.
There is a men's division and a women's division.
They've never done two women's divisions, I don't think. I think it's always been, if any time they had a women's division and it's two weight classes, it's always one half men, half women. I would like to see them
It's heavyweights from reports.
Really? Yes. So like the...
women's flyweights and heavyweights.
Okay. It's not like the
And I think the UFC actually announced that themselves. Yeah, they did. They did on during one of the broadcasts.
I'm the number one. Everyone knows I'm the number one tough guy. I guess I don't really care until it actually comes on. Then I just start watching. But Mike, you and I have been championing this division for a while. Like we said, it took some time to get going. I remember when it first started, everyone was kind of like, oh, is there enough talent for it? But then talent migrated down from 135, up from 115. And this was certainly the busiest division of the three women's weight classes in the UFC. A lot of movement. Yes, Valentina at the top of rock. You know, no one's knocking her off anytime soon. But as far as contenders go, you have a great mixture. If you just look at sort of the top 30 names of veterans, up-and-comers, you've got Casey O'Neill coming up there, Manon Fiorot, a lot of good names. Molly McCann's a good fighter. What else we got here? And then we had Alexa Grasso's in there now. She didn't get to fight last time, unfortunately. Again, you still have veterans. Jessica Andrade, I don't know where she's fighting next, but Caitlin Chukagian, Lauren Murphy. Tyler Santos, another name coming up. Can't believe I almost didn't mention her. So, yeah, it's been one of the best women's divisions for a while. Certainly it's above 135. Is it above strawweight already? I wouldn't go that far. I do think if you take the top 15 at strawweight and the top 15 at flyweight, I would probably lean towards strawweight. But it's closer than people think. I do think it's closer than people think. Flyweight has been the most exciting division, women's division in the UFC this year.
I think 2022 is too early. There's exciting things happening. You mentioned all these prospects coming up. I think I don't even know who's going to be on the tough season. I'm very interested and intrigued to see like who will be on there. But I expect some very interesting names from the prospect realm. But I would say it's tough. And I know we're talking about up and down and across the board. With Valentina as champion, it makes things a little more difficult because just as good as these fighters are, they're just so far away from her. So while I think 2022 is a bit premature, I think 2023, 2024 for sure. Some more developments. Let these women get some fights. It could get there.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
And then he asked a second question, I believe. So we'll talk about how well Dustin Poirier would do at 170 against each of the top 10 contenders. I think we'll generalize this a little bit so we don't have to go through all of them. But then he asks, does he even beat Bilal Muhammad? Same walk weight as Colby, so he can't be undersized, right? So I'll start first and I'll let you go. I actually think Poirier does pretty well at 170. He's huge at 155. He cuts a ton of weight and he's still very good. I would actually favor him against Bilal right now. And just let me look at our rankings real quick. And just, I think Luque is a tough fight, but I think he's competitive there. I'd favor him against Wonderboy, although Wonderboy probably won't be ranked number 5 in our rankings come January. I think he's competitive with Gilbert Burns. I think he'd be competitive with Leon. Colby, he would definitely be competitive because they know each other so well. Usman's just a really tough matchup for everybody, but I still think he'd be somewhat an interesting underdog in that fight because he's so talented. So can he beat some of these guys, AK? Yes. Am I super confident? Not really. But he wouldn't have to cut all the extra weight. So maybe he's a better fighter that way. I don't know. I think he's competitive, but I wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, if he goes into 170, he's going to be a world champion.
Yeah. He's a top 10 welterweight, I think, easily. I think easily he's a top 10 welterweight. Like you said, I probably would favor him against Bilal. That's a matchup that quite a few people, I know it was brought up on the last episode of On to the Next One. I don't agree necessarily with the notion that he wouldn't be undersized. What's a nice way to put this? There is no nice way to put this. I have to knock myself here. I'm probably also close in walk around weight to Colby Covington. And let's just say physically we are not the same should we step into the octagon. So walk around weight does not necessarily dictate how they would like actual strength and, density, sort of your body density when we're talking about how people match up physically. I mean, he wouldn't be like tiny. He wouldn't be like a tiny welterweight, but he wouldn't be on the bigger end. I think you would notice if he was in there with a Colby, with a Kamaru Usman. Some other names, some other names in there who I think would look pretty big. But I mean, guys like Masvidal, Gilbert Burns, these guys had also competed at lightweight before. So that's the thing to keep in mind. They kind of are also just fighting at welterweight. It's a more comfortable weight for them. Maybe Poirier is moving that direction. Also, just physically, he's what's Poirier now? Like 30, right? He's still pretty young, right?
Ish, yeah.
Yeah. So his body, I mean, theoretically, is still changing. So he could just be that it is time for him to mold into a welterweight. So I would love to see it. I would love to see it. It's a shame that he has to move just because, again, he's had a couple of cracks at the top of the lightweight division and only, has an interim title, because he's still clearly a top three, top four lightweight in the world. But in MMA, you do have to keep things fresh in the eyes of the fans and probably for yourself as well as a competitor. So I do think we see that 170 move, but he's top 10. No problem.
Poirier will be 33 in January.
Oh, 33. Okay, so but maybe still. A little past the body changing phase, but you never know.
Yeah, if we're rounding up and down right now, he's, I would say 30, more than 35. What else? All right, you're up, AK.
All right, let me go to our pal Toon on IG. Everyone's going to want to know this. What do you predict is the next fight for McGregor? Can he be can he be the champ at 155 again, Mike?
I'll address the first question off the bat. I think he, just because of timing, I think he will fight Poirier one more time. It might be at 170. Timing, of course, is everything. In terms of becoming the lightweight champion, boy, it would have to be like the Conor Rise part two, right? It'd have to be lightning in a bottle. But I mean, again, let me pull up the rankings here. I'd have a hard time favoring him in any matchup at 155. Oliveira, absolutely not. Gaethje, nope. I think stylistically, nope. He'd actually have a chance.
Yeah.
But he'd have to bolt him in the first 3 minutes. Yeah. So I'd actually favor Gaethje there. Dariush would be kind of interesting. But this version of Dariush looks to be a nightmare matchup for him. Makhachev would be an absolutely terrifying nightmare.
We know that would go, yeah.
And Chandler would be interesting if he had a Gaethje-esque game plan where he just went in there and threw hands with Conor. But if he wrestled Conor, he'd beat him easily. And Ferguson would be a fine matchup, but I don't even know if I'd favor him against Tony right now.
No, you gotta
keep
going.
So no, I don't think he'll be
RDA. I might still favor RDA. I mean, if we finally got that one somehow, I probably would still favor RDA.
Yeah, he's got two fights left, and I also don't think he'll re-sign. I just don't. I think there's more money to be made outside of it. So no, I do not think he will be a champion again in the UFC. But there's still at least two very big fights for him.
Yeah, I'm down with all that. I do want to read Toon's other question as well. They asked who would win a boxing match between Henry Cejudo and Shaquille O'Neal. First of all, I'll say, if you want to see Shaq boxing, there is a couple of clips out there. He had that show Shaq Versus. Do you remember Shaq Versus,
yes. Mike?
Where he would just participate with other athletes in their sport. It was a really, really cool idea. He did a couple of boxing matches. Actually, he boxed Oscar La Hoya first. And then I think season two, Shane Mosley.
Yep.
And the De La Hoya fight was kind of uneventful. I think De La Hoya clearly won. The Shane Mosley fight is pretty wild. I don't know if the full fight's out there, but there's definitely highlights of it. It gets like really violent. And Shane Mosley also won that one as like a 5-rounder by decision. But it's pretty scary how aggressive Shaq could be. Shaq later said about the De La Hoya fight, like, oh, I kind of took it easy on him. But like, he was probably taking it easy on Shaq as well. Same with Mosley. I don't think anyone's throwing full force like shots. So if it was like a do or die matchup, I just don't see how Shaq could beat any professional fighter. So I'd go with Cejudo. I know he's quite a bit smaller, but I'm sure Cejudo could outbox Shaquille O'Neal.
If Joe Johnson can play in the NBA in 2022 for the Boston Celtics, then Shaquille O'Neal could beat Henry Cejudo in a boxing match.
Breaking news. Well, it won't be by the time this airs. But yeah.
I just don't know. Like, I don't know if Cejudo can land a shot to the head of Shaq. Like, he'd just have to run around, and Shaq would probably just need to hit him one time. So, yeah, I'll lean with the Diesel, and then he gets on the mic and sings "I Know I Got Skills" from his first rap album in the 1990s.
Sorry, Triple C. Sorry.
Nivethan
Kuganantham.
Kuganantham.
My man from Markham. No worries. My man from Markham.
I wanted to revisit a question I asked on Otno in September. With what we know now, do you think McGregor versus DS3 will happen outside of the UFC, AK?
Outside the UFC, I don't know. I'm not as confident as everyone that Diaz is done with the UFC. I think everyone is saying he's going to fight one more and leave. I don't know. I don't know if that's the way Diaz goes. He's very hard. Obviously, he's super hard to predict. He is the definition of mercurial. I think when we bring up that word, we bring it up with him and guys like him and like Uriah Hall. So I just don't know what happens outside the UFC. I think that if it ever does happen, I've always thought it would happen inside the octagon. I'm still confident it will. I know things are complicated. Like we always say we kind of touched upon this with McGregor's injury. Does he fight Poirier again instead? McGregor always has so many options, but I think he knows how much money there is now at Trilogy. So I'm predicting that Diaz will eventually come back to the UFC and we do see it happen. So no, not outside.
I will say, God, I will say it does happen outside of the UFC. I will say it does happen.
Okay.
That's if Nate wants to fight Dustin Poirier. And if they can make that fight, if they can put that on the books by March, I think it happens. If not, I think we'll have the same Diaz versus the UFC kind of conversation. If Connor's ready to come back, maybe they'll just do it and just get it done. But I think if it's not on the books by like, if we don't see that fight announced by like May, June, July, ish, then no, I don't think it happens in the UFC. I think Nate will be gone. Not in the UFC. I think once Nate's done, I think he's done. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That I'll agree with. If he leaves, I don't think he's coming back. That I will agree with. I just don't think he's leaving.
Yeah. The UFC could play hardball with him and just not let him fight and just keep him under contract because I feel like they could be a little childish with this whole thing and be like, well, we're not just going to like let you go and go fight Jake Paul for a whole bunch of money. Like, we want to like milk this value for as long as we can. So we're just not going to let you fight. We'll just keep extending you. And if we can't get on the same page, like, you just won't fight. And then you won't go and fight Jake Paul or anybody else. So I think at some point, Nate will get that fight. He'll fight anybody. And then he just goes on and maybe he starts his own boxing promotion. Like, I think Nate.
He should.
Yeah. I think Nate fighting Jake would be big. And I think Nate could do his own promotion and put his guys on the card and Jake put his guys on the card. And I think Jake would co-promote with Nate to make that fight massive. Like, I really do. And I think Connor and Nate could do the same thing in the boxing world. Like, we're seeing it with YouTube channels and fighters and past fighters. And now we're seeing we're seeing all these different boxing promotions and all this stuff. We're seeing Khabib promote. We're seeing all these different things going on. It would not shock me the least to see all these fighters being like, oh, look what Khabib's doing. Like, I could do this, but I could do it with boxing and I could do it better than Jake Paul and Khabib. So there's lots of money to be made outside of the UFC. And I think that's why I said, I was telling media members while I was out in Tampa, the next 3 years of combat sports, what it's going to look like what this whole space is going to look like in 2024, 2025, it's so fascinating to me. I have no idea. It's like when we're in elementary school, AK, we're like, remember, in the year 2000, cars are going to fly. Cars are going to do this. Like, that's what these conversations are going to be like the next couple of years. Like, what the combat sports space is going to look like.
Mike, you saw Evander Holyfield box live in person in the year of our Lord 2021. This happened. You were there. So we you know it wasn't a trick of the light. If you saw it on TV, you might say, oh, it was like computer graphics. You were there. This happened in front of you. And you did nothing to stop it, first of all.
I tried. I interviewed him, and I thought that interview enough would get him pulled from that fight.
Would shut it down. The commission would see the interview and back, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, my gosh. You want to ask the other question?
Yeah, these two are kind of related. So I'm going to tie these two questions together. So Nivathan also wants to know, we had a question about Mike Brown and American Top Team. Mike Brown had a tough December going, Mike Brown. I'm not getting this mixed up, right? These two questions make sense. Everything's jumbled on my mind. Mike Brown, a coach, of course, had a tough December going 0-3 with three of his biggest fighters. On the opposite end, Trevor Whitman, 3-0 the month before. Do you think more private gyms that focus on only a couple of fighters is more beneficial? And that we got another question on IG from Luke Pac Mirage, who was saying they thought that American Top Team premier gym in MMA, but considering what happened to Amanda Nunes, Dustin Poirier, are they still? They had several other high-profile losses, Thiago Santos, Masvidal, Woodley, Horiguchi, etc. Do you think this lack of success will hurt their status or position in the MMA world? So kind of a two-parter there. ATT, did they get dinged up their reputation a bit? And also, is it better for some fighters to maybe move to a smaller camp that focuses more on them?
Man, this is a tough one because, I mean, it's each fighter is different and they like things in different ways. I still, as tough as maybe some of these losses are, I don't think it really dings ATT that much because, again, let's just kind of go back and look at the fighters themselves. Amanda Nunes, we've talked about this a million times. She has been known as the greatest women's fighter of all time for quite some time. She's fought everybody and she's beat everybody and she has to be on her A game for all these fights and has had to do that for a very long time. Eventually that catches up with everybody. Not Habib. Habib is the unicorn in this situation, but also took him. He also hasn't had to be in that spot as long as some of these fighters have had to do it. So Nunes is kind of a different story. Poirier too, like two fights with Connor, the career he's had. He's been at this for a long time. What that belt meant to him, the way he approached the first round, and Nunes as well. You can't blame ATT for that. Like this is how the fighters approach the fights. Like you can't just blame the coach, you can't blame Mike Brown, so forth and so on. And it's kind of the same thing. Like Santos won his last fight and he's getting ready to fight Ankalaev, so he wins. Jorge Masvidal, I think he's just not as good. Like we talk about lightning in a bottle, this could be lightning in a bottle. Like what Masvidal did in 2019, that was lightning in a bottle. That was the pure definition of it. Like it was like a good thing for Masvidal to like have success, because we've been waiting for one of those OGs to have that ride and ride that magic carpet. And I feel like that's what Masvidal did. But now you had to fight Usman twice, who's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I don't think anybody beats Usman right now. The only person I think who can beat Kamaru Usman is Colby Covington, and Usman beat him again. Woodley, I don't know if he's not really... he's kind of an ATT guy. He's born and raised, but not really... He's more of a St. Louis guy, Dean Thomas's coach. Horiguchi was winning every second of that Sergio Pettis fight. He just got caught. So, I'm not ready to give up on ATT or even lower their level that much. No. I just feel like it was just a tough stretch. Trevor Whitman's had tough stretches throughout his career. And now Trevor Whitman is up the top. And that's why he's the coach of the year. So there you go. I think every coach has had their ups and downs. Every fighter's had their ups and downs. And coaches are no different. And gyms are no different.
Yeah, by my count, American Top Team has about 25 fighters, not counting affiliates. This isn't even counting the various affiliates. This is just a Florida location. About 25 fighters in the UFC, which is 10 more. This is a rough count, by the way, guys. 10 more than some of the closest ones like Extreme Couture, Alpha Male, Jackson Wink MMA. So they're still doing very, very well. Fortis MMA is actually up there as well. But they're still doing very, very well. Again, the fact that they're even in these high-profile fights shows you how much the gym is thriving. I don't know. I don't think you're right. I don't think too many people would make that connection and say, well, it must be something going on with the gym. But I do like the notion that some of these fighters would consider, having a change to a smaller, more intimate setting. I don't know. For some people, it would help them. Some people wouldn't. It really depends on the fighter, and it depends on the setting. Trevor Whitman, again, has had a really, really, has had a lot of success with sort of a somewhat smaller team. And again, that's sort of the way it goes in pro boxing, right? Pro boxing camps are normally geared towards, building up one fighter, and that's just not how MMA is. So will we see more of that in MMA? I doubt it. But I do think some fighters could benefit from it, but maybe not the names mentioned, not like Amanda Nunes and Dustin Poirier. I think they've been doing just fine in this big camp setting.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own. Colby's been at ATT. Wasn't for him. He went to MMA Masters, but he's not like a full-fledged member of MMA Masters. He just built his crew to train there. He works with some of the coaches, brought in some of their fighters, and it's like a team tailor-made for him. So, yeah, I mean, all fighters would like to get to that point where they are financially steady enough to just build their own teams around them. It's just not that way for everybody at this point in their career. So I think tough stretch, but... Yeah, I don't think this hurts ATT at all for as a whole. So Tristan Gordet, my old buddy, In your opinion,
I sent this as Mike said at the beginning. I kind of turned these into a readable list. I sanitized this this email for us. There's a lot of trash talk and there's a lot of trash talk in there, Mike. I cut it out. There was also a lot of well wishing. He had some very nice things to say about us in the podcast and you know, wishing us the best. Same to you, Tristan. Same to you. But I did have to take out some Tristan trash talk, as you're familiar with.
Oh yeah, I could already tell this email is like 10 times shorter than it normally would be. In your opinion, do you think the UFC has to do a better job on which up and coming prospects should be brought along solely and which prospects should be fast tracked to the top? We've seen fighters such as Casey O'Neill and Tom Aspinall wanting to move up slowly so they can gain more experience, while others like Chris Daukaus, Edmund Shahbazyan, and Jimmy Crute have been fast tracked to face a top 10 opponent. I mean, how do you balance this where you don't ruin a prospect's confidence, AK?
So Tristan's pretty confident that you are. I think he sees you as a bit of a taskmaster and a bit of, he said, like, you know, you like just mashing. He seemed to imply that you love throwing prospects into the wood chipper, which I don't think is true. We said it, like, we wish once you reach the UFC level, there was a way. Maybe make creative use of contender series. So we've had other ideas for that as well, like using it more for like a redemption show as well. But why not keep it also, just like when someone signs a contender series contract, why not keep them fighting, like have a couple fights of contender series? You know, they go from contender series signee to contender series main eventer, you know, and you build a whole contender series episode around like a Casey O'Neill, right? Not that she needs it, but, you know, just an example of a good fighter who could be at risk of getting rushed too soon in the near future. Imagine if Sage Northcutt had sort of come around this time when there was a contender series, and he would have been the poster child for this, the streaming show. This new streaming show would have been a test for him. It would have been a test for the program. So that there's so many ways they could play around with matching up prospects. Chris Daukaus is a bit of a tricky one. He kind of fought his way into the top 10. The Derek Lewis matchup made a lot of sense. So I don't know if you can knock the UFC there. Sure, you could have fed Chris Daukaus a few more, whatever, lower rank guys. I just don't know what that would have done for him. Edmund Shahbazyan is definitely a weird one. Jimmy Crute's kind of in between. I think he fought his way. I think the Anthony Smith matchup made sense, but I agree. People, you know, do you want to see him fight lower ranked guys? Sure, and keep building. And, I wish the UFC would take more time. I wish they could afford to take more time. Maybe they can now, the shape of the roster is so different. There's so many unproven talents that, you know, maybe they can afford to have someone who's on a 3 or 4 fight win streak still fight medium, you know, mid tier people. That's my hope. But yes, I kind of agree with the sentiment of the question, which is I do wish the UFC would just be a little more delicate with their prospects, depending which division they're in.
I actually don't have like a huge problem with how they presented some of their prospects. Like, yeah, you can make argument, and you could do the same thing with Bellator. Like, if you really wanted to, you could do the same thing with Bellator. But for the most part, Bellator is praised about how they build up their prospects. Like, give them wins. Like, it's almost the boxing model. Get them in there, look good, build them up. AJ McKee, that's always like the prime example. AJ McKee is the homegrown guy. All of his fights for the most part with Bellator. Now he's the world champion and one of the best 45ers on the planet, regardless of promotion. So, but there's ways to get it. There's people who thought putting Aaron Pico in with Henry Corrales was terrible matchmaking in hindsight, but it really wasn't. Like, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So Casey O'Neill this is the other thing. Casey O'Neill and Tom Aspinall get on the microphone or do interviews and say, listen, I'm in no rush. I'm 24 years old. Like, I don't want to get fast tracked too quickly. Like, I don't want to fight Valentina in my fifth or sixth UFC fight. Like, I want to savor the flavor. I want to enjoy the ride. And there are other fighters who are like, I'm ready to fight for the title now. And the UFC is like, okay, you want to fight for the title now? Now you get to fight Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes it's just some of the wins that you get and some of the names on your resume, there's no choice but to submit. But Chris Daukaus is fighting Derek Lewis. Everybody thought that was the right fight to make. Everybody got a piece of an Otno point when that fight was made. Mm-hmm. Edmund Shahbazyan fighting Derek Brunson. Yeah, I think it took a little too long. We got to see Brunson get a win. Like, it just kept getting pushed back. These are the fights Shahbazyan won. He went in there and just destroyed Brad Tavares, destroyed him at MSG on pay-per-view. Like, what are you supposed to do? Get it, like, send him back? Like, send him back and fight? Like, you win a fight like that, you need to fight a top 10 guy, or at least right around there. It's not like they put him in there and, you know, he fought a top 5 guy. They didn't throw him in there with Chris Weidman. They didn't throw him in there with anybody crazy. Like, I felt like Derek Brunson at the time, like, little did we know how good Derek Brunson has gotten. Derek Brunson went away for the title, but we didn't know that back then. We thought it might be a tough matchup, but a good test for Edmund.
I picked Shabazzian.
A lot of people did. Jimmy Crute fighting Anthony Smith wasn't a bridge too far because Smith had lost two in a row and badly. He fought Devin Clark, which just happened to be like, this is where we're at right now. He gets a quick submission in a main event spot, but like, Jimmy Crute was like a good test for Anthony Smith more than Jimmy Crute was for Anthony, like the other way around. So it's tough. No, it's not perfect, but I don't think the UFC does a terrible job with this. Casey O'Neill fighting Roxanne Modafferi is the perfect fight to make.
Very good.
Perfect fight to make. We'll see what happens next. If they throw her in there with a top five fighter who's just like a murderer, if they throw her in there like Jessica Andrade after that, that's a little crazy. That's too much too soon.
You know what else good that Fiorot and Jessica Ai is also, they're handling the O'Neill and Fiorot situations very, very well.
Perfect.
I will say. Yeah. They're both 3-0. They're both now fighting veterans who are, you know, probably on their way down, you know, downwards. They're handling them very well. That's a matchup that I would say I don't want to see those two have to fight for a long time. If it happens, awesome. I'd watch it. Like, I'm not against it, but I think they're handling them perfectly.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think we agree on this, that I wish they could recalibrate a bit better, like coming off a loss, like after Edmund lost to Brunson, and then now I feel like they're mishandling him a little bit. But
yeah, the Jack Hermanson matchmaking was atrocious. That was terrible.
All right, let me get to some sort of, sorry, this one just came in, but it's pretty easy. This is sort of like a yes or no answer, Mike, from Smokey Baby, also from our pal Rand Odenheimer via email. They kind of want to know, well, first, it's a bit of a two-parter. Smokey Baby, is it time for female atomweights in the UFC? Danielle Kelly, upcoming Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu star, she's grappling Rose Namajunas soon at the end of the month, says she would compete at 105 in MMA. Some fighters like Loma are really, you know, she's a 105er as well. What do you think? And they could sign some people from overseas. What do you think?
Yeah, they should have done this like 4 years ago, but I don't think it's going to happen. Sorry, no, I don't see it happening.
Ren wants to know, and I guess this is in the wake of Mr. Justin Taffa missing the heavyweight limit by a pound. What would you, if you had to choose one, Mike, let's say in 2022 to be introduced, atom weight or super heavyweight, men's super heavyweight?
No super heavyweight. There are many promotions out there. There are many promotions out there where you could find some delightful super heavyweight action, not in the UFC. I would actually rather see, man, this is tough. Like, I think there's enough meat for 105. I definitely think there's enough meat for 105. I think
there's definitely
There's
definitely enough meat for 266 plus. I'll tell you that. It's a lot of meat out there.
Okay. I'm going to change my answer slightly.
Okay.
If the UFC does not sign Kayla Harrison, 105 has a chance. If they sign Kayla Harrison, we're not going to see a 105-pound division. Because if they sign Kayla, they're gonna build this division back up.
Keeps 145 alive again.
That's their extra division. Yeah. That's it.
Resuscitates it.
But if Kayla stays with the PFL, well, even then with the PFL. If Kayla signs with Bellator, I think 105 has a very good chance of happening. Not a very good chance, but there's a chance. So yeah, it's tough. But yeah, super heavyweight, no. I'd rather see a cruiserweight division. I'd rather see a 225 than a super heavyweight.
Give me the supers.
Of course you. You and Jed would love the supers.
Absolutely.
We can find that on Fight Circus or all these other fun events. All right, I'll go to FFS08.
We can jump around a little bit here.
Yeah, FFS0807. I have a request. Is it possible that you, that other site, that other site, the Schmo, that other site, MacLife, et cetera, join forces to finally tell us where are Krohn Gracians to beat Magomed Sharipov? Nobody really knows. Krohn especially. Zabit, like, there's, who knows? Ali's talked about it enough, done a bunch of interviews, did the media tours. So that's kind of up in the air. Krohn, I have no idea. And I don't think anybody knows.
He could just be done
with
MMA. Honestly, Krohn could just be done with MMA. Yeah. This happens to a lot of, I don't want to just single out the Gracies, but this has happened to a few Gracie fighters where they lose one fight and they're like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. When he's ready to fight, he'll fight. He's always been kind of an enigma. How do you explain the lack of books, biography about MMA? P.S. People want to show where Mike and Jed discuss hot topics, the biggest news in the combat sports world. By the time this thing drops, you can go back and listen to BTL second week in a row. Jed and I paired up. We're waiting.
I was going to say
the finals is going to happen soon. But Jed and I talked about Jake Paul knocking out Tyron Woodley, and then we did a promotional airing of grievances. So go check that out.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
But how do you explain the lack of books biography about MMA, AK? There are some out there, of course, but maybe not enough.
Again, it really just has to, anything like that, there has to be a market for, right? If there's money to be made in people reading those biographies, then there will be. But, you know, you'll only have, so far there's only been a few spikes of interest, like a Ronda Rousey book and like a Paige VanZant book, things like that. So what happens, Conor McGregor, of course. There just needs to be more people on that level. Like, I remember pro wrestling, there used to be no pro wrestling books. And then Mick Foley came out with one, The Rock, and then suddenly, like, Bret Hart has an amazing one, Chris Jericho. And now it's like there's so many pro wrestling biographies. So MMA has to reach that level. The other issue is UFC controls so much of the history. This is a tricky thing. The UFC controls so much of the history and so much of the narrative, and the access to a lot of the current stars is pretty limited. It's hard to create that full picture without the UFC not necessarily helping out, but sort of just sort of easing up on the access that's allowed. So popularity would be number one. There just has to be a market for it. If there's no market, then you're just not gonna see a lot of books. There's a little spike there for a while. BJ Penn, Forrest Griffin, excuse me. But GSP I think has one too. But it kind of, you know, Bisping, I could name everyone, but it's a smattering. There's not a market for it yet. So that's the main reason. But also the UFC, just how much control they have over the history is another thing.
Yeah, I just don't think there's been enough on the history of MMA. It's just because, and it's a different sport. Baseball, you can go back and you can almost compare different things. Mm-hmm. MMA just never stops. There's no off season. Like, you can't take, we have the World Series just ended. We have 5 months. So what are we going to do in these 5 months? Oh, we're going to go back in history. We're going to write a book. We're going to have Hall of Fame voting. We're going to do this and do that. MMA doesn't have, this right now is our break from MMA. This is our off season. It's four freaking weeks.
That's all we get.
And we don't even really have one because Ryzen is New Year's Eve, which is always a great card. And we should be highlighting that. But the UFC's back January 15th, and then it's just off to the races again. That's just how we are.
Our 2021 year-end awards and articles will barely be lukewarm by the time there's like 45 more fights in UFC, Bellator 1, Ryzen. It just moves so quickly. Yeah, you're right. Where is the time to take stock, and where do you say, well, I'm going to write about this era, or I'm going to write about this period of time? There's no end. There's no beginning, and there is no end. It's just ongoing forever. How much time we got, Mike?
We could probably go like 10 more minutes. Oh, right. This question just came in. This is kind of a debatable topic right now. James Clement on Instagram asks, will Bilal Muhammad fight Khamzat Chimaev next?
No.
I say absolutely not. I like Bilal Muhammad a lot. I've been following his career since he was on the regional scene, been interviewing him for a long time. He made a gigantic mistake at the end of his win over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He should have called out Khamzat then. Okay. You call out Leon, you call out Usman. You have no chance at either of those two fights right now, bro. You just don't. You could have been right there and cut that a fiery promo on Khamzat. And if you had done that right then and there, you might have got this fight. And then you went to your post-fight interview. Then you went to the scrum and you said, I would rather fight Khamzat for the title and not in a title eliminator. So again, now you're saying, okay, I'll fight him, but it'd be more beneficial for us both if we fight for the belt. And now 2 days later, he's out doing interviews with everybody saying, and he's putting out memes, yeah, give me the Chimaev fight. Dude, you had your chance. You had your chance to get it. You didn't get it. Now you're not going to. They're going to give it to Neil Magny. If you took that time right then and there and just cut a fiery promo right there, only on Chimaev, not Usman, not Leon, nobody else. Chimaev, you did a Nate Diaz on Chimaev. You'd be getting the fight. Your next fight would be against Chimaev. It'd probably be in February or March on pay-per-view, on a main card. You would have got that fight, but you waited too long. You waited too long. Sorry.
Mic drop. I don't think anyone has done the immediate post-fight call-out of Khamzat, right? I could be wrong. I don't know if...
Maybe Magny. I think Magny might be the only one.
Did he
one.
Do it in the cage after he won?
Yeah, I don't know. When was the last fight?
I don't remember.
Magny's last fight wasn't the cast. He won after that, right? I have to go back. There's so many
please. Again,
friggin'
guys,
fights.
This year has been like 38 months long. but yeah, no, it's...
Oh, no, he did. He fought Jeff Neal, and I believe he did call for Chimaev.
Okay. So Magny is the one. But yeah, I mean, look, Bilal, you gotta put it on TV. You got to get it on tape, recorded. I mean, yes, I know you said he brought it up during the post-fight and wanting a championship fight with Khamzat, but get it on TV. Get it on ESPN+. Get that clip going, you know, circulating so Dana White can't pull this. Nobody wants to fight Khamzat. I don't get it. Nobody wants to fight him. It's like, there's a lot of people who want to fight Khamzat. I'm not sure why you're pushing this narrative, but Bilal's certainly one of them. And we know Neil Magny's one of them. And you're right, Mike. Neil Magny is way, way ahead in the Khamzat sweepstakes, I would say, than Bilal, unfortunately.
All right, let's rapid fire some of these. Trip Harper, our good friend.
Yeah. Well, let me ask. You can skip the first. He kind of wants to know how I got in the business. Trip, I'll send you a DM about that. It's less than epic.
Yeah.
But Mike, who's one guy you've never interviewed or spoke with that you always wanted to?
Tyron Woodley.
Really?
That's the sit down interview I've always wanted. And like, I had the chance. Like, I was literally out there, and I really wanted it. I was like, not the interview that I've always wanted with Tyron Woodley, but just something. Like, I've never had the chance. Like, I've asked him questions in scrums and stuff, but I've never had like a one-on-one interview with Tyron. He's always been at the top of the list. But in terms of like 30-minute, like sit down, like let's just hit record and get after it, Woodley's the guy, especially now, especially after everything that he's gone through, the whole thing with Jake Paul getting knocked out like that, the way he's handling it, which by the way is absolutely amazing. That's still number one for me. That might be even a higher number one than it was before going into the Jake Paul fight.
GSP for me, obviously, I'd love to sit down and talk with GSP sometime. Anyone ever make you starstruck?
No. No, not particularly. The Island Boys. Maybe the Island Boys.
Probably the first time I ever did an interview. My first one ever was with Benson Henderson. So I was... But I don't know. I kept it together. I don't know. We'll see. I have the audio somewhere. My voice could be shaking. I could be crying the whole time, as far as I know. But I'm pretty sure I kept it together. But I felt a little bit of nerves. I was definitely a fan of Bendo. So for that to be my first professional MMA interview was really cool.
Michael, now, what were you guys into in high school? Sports. Lots of sports in women. Also, on a scale of 1 to 10, how scared should E. Casey Lydon's upcoming opponent be, and what round will be getting the stoppage? 12 seconds, baby.
On a scale of 1 to Ryan Hall, he could be Ryan Hall frightened. By the way, Casey says, I just want to remind people, Casey's fight should be coming up around, he's not sure, but last week of February. Last weekend of February. They don't know exactly what day yet, but if anyone, we will keep you posted on that. So, and that is also the countdown for his opponent's life. So, very soon.
Like the Y2J countdown. John Brake, first MMA fight you ever saw?
I think it was, for me, I think it was the one I remember, Alessio Sakara and Chris Lieben. I think. And it's burned into my brain. I just don't remember if it was the first one. But
I know I watched some of the background, but the first event I ever purchased and like begged my parents to like let me watch and buy was Tito Shamrock 1 UFC 40. I was very much into the WWE and the Attitude Era. So when that fight happened and that fight was on the books, I was like, I have to watch this one. And I did. And Tito whooped his ass and I was shocked by all of that. So there you go. Go ahead.
Bunch of quick ones from John, right? Was there a specific moment or event that made you go, I want to be involved in this space. I got to cover him.
Boy, that's way too long of a story. I will say, Whoa. So I'd only done like a few MMA interviews, and then I got invited out to this event out in Syracuse called the MMA Classic Fan Expo. And after having conversations out there and speaking to some of the fighters who were there, I was hosting a podcast which was the SFLC podcast. It was all sports. It was just me and my buddies just talking crap about our local sports teams. We had some interviews. After that weekend, I said, the show is now an MMA show. And that was it. From there, after having those conversations, just seeing how fascinating they were, everything changed from there.
Kimbo Slice and Dada 5000. I mean, I was already working in MMA, but like that's what cemented it for me. I was like, this is what I want to cover for the rest of my life.
rumored fight that never came to be that you wish did.
I mean, that's not even a rumored fight, I guess, but I really wish we had seen McGregor and RDA. This kind of goes with the Jose Aldo thing, where it's like, gosh, just to know how different history would be. You know, I mean, that was not rumored. I'm sorry. That was a signed fight, but man, just another one. How things could it? Maybe nothing would have changed. Maybe McGregor would have smoked him. It would have been very different for Nate Diaz, though. That's for sure. Things would be very different for Nate Diaz and possibly McGregor, depending on how the fight went.
It was Fedor Brock Lesnar, because I actually went to that card in Dallas, and the main event was not Fedor versus Brock Lesnar. All-time favorite fighter to watch based on nothing except in-cage performance. I think I know your answer, but
I'm sticking with GSP. You thought I was going to say Ryan Hall, but no. I am sticking with GSP. A lot of people, you know, sort of used to criticize GSP for – look, he used his wrestling a lot to neutralize his opponents, not always the most exciting thing. But for me, there was – maybe it was opponents. Maybe it's just the way the UFC was at the time. There was just a buzz around his fights, which for me has only been matched by a few people. Again, Ronda Rousey, McGregor, Brock Lesnar, things like that. And just that he always delivered, he always won, and he always found a way to take out these very dangerous opponents of different styles. Just forever fascinating to me. So definitely my favorite fighter in that regard.
I mean, on A-plus level, Anderson Silva. It's got to be. When he's on, when he's flowing out there, when he's yapping in the best way, not like the Damian Maya, Patrick Cote kind of way. I'm talking about like the Forrest Griffin, Chris Lieben, like those. I mean, those performances are some of the all-time greats, like top five greatest MMA performances of all time. Anderson Silva's got at least two of them, if not three of them. So yeah, when he's on, there's nobody better, but when he's off, there may be nobody worse, but he still wins, which makes him so great. We'll do a couple more. Favorite sport outside of MMA, AK?
I mean, basketball by far. I when I was younger, I wanted to write about basketball. I know this is easy way for people to get a cheap shot at me. I know so much more about basketball than I know about MMA. Whatever. Make your jokes, people. But I love basketball. If I had to only watch one sport as a fan, it would absolutely be basketball. I could watch basketball forever. I could watch the crappiest teams. I could watch college. I could watch, Mike, I could watch your kids' teams running around probably for an hour. I wouldn't care. I absolutely love it.
It's baseball for me. I was enthralled in the Red Sox playoff run. It was nice. I felt like 10 years younger. A huge Red Sox fan. Fenway Park is one of my favorite places on earth. And when I went out and covered UFC 220, the media day was at Fenway Park, like in the luxury boxes. Pretty amazing. That was a career highlight for me for sure. We got two more. PFL's broadcast plan for 2022. I believe their deal with ESPN ends in 2021. Also, any chance they could have a co-production with Bellator? PFL's broadcast plan for 2022 is still up in the air. I know they're doing their Challenger series on Fubo TV, I believe. They have like an app, and they also have like their own network on the cable stream. I really hope that's not the plan for the actual broadcast. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure there's plenty of suitors, plenty of digital platforms, maybe Hulu, Amazon, something like that. I think they could be players, but
co-production, co-promotion
with Bellator. It would maybe be for a Kayla fight, but I don't think they would like. Just their structures are so different. Like maybe at the end of the year, like whoever
champion versus champion.
That'd be a cool event.
That would be so sick. Never say never again. Fairly unlikely in the MMA world as we know it, but every year surprises us. Like you said, we have no idea what the next 2 to 4 years of MMA, of the combat sports landscape, is going to look like. Maybe for some of these other promotions, co-promotion, co-production is the way to go. So I like the suggestion, Timmy, and I hope it happens. I think it'd just be such a cool idea, especially the way, Mike, you just laid it out. Your champion at the end of the year gets that $1 million prize, PFL title, and a shot at a Bellator. You could even make it non-title. I know people wouldn't like that, but even just like a non-title match between the PFL champion and Bellator champion, that'd be so cool. Just
dude, you don't need to put the titles on the line. Yeah, I think that'd be super cool. Right? And that'd be out-of-the-box thinking. That'd be some great, great ideas.
You need more of that in MMA.
And then just the last question, we'll do this real quick. Brobro 86, why are there only two January UFC events out of five Saturdays? Because it's time to take a break, dude.
Do you want more? Did you want
like, what else more do you need?
Listen. There's,
yeah.
Mike, we've, again, continuing this theme of you never know how the combat sports landscape is going to change. 10 years ago, the thought of there being a UFC card every weekend would have been insane. People would be like, you can't. You'll saturate the market. There's not enough viewers for it. There's not enough fighters. It won't generate enough revenue. And now here we are. We have the UFC Apex. So even without venues to travel to, they can literally hold a card every weekend. If you count Contender Series, they hold more cards than there are weeks in the year. So it's an amazing, like, I'm glad we're ending on this question because I know it seems like a pretty, like, I think your answer is right. We just need a break. Why stuff every weekend? But it's amazing that we are asking this question heading into 2022. How much has changed and that we just have UFC fights, Bellator events, Ryzen 1 all the time. It's just amazing. I didn't see this. I thought this could happen when I got into this industry. I just didn't know if it would happen so quickly.
No other sports league on earth runs this kind of schedule. They just don't. So yes, give it. And it's not just like, I'm not saying it is like a media member being like, oh, give us a break. Like, I don't care. Like, my job is to cover fights. And if there's fights on a Saturday and I'm working, I'm going to cover the damn fights. But their production team, their staff, like the UFC staff members, like, I mean, give these guys a break. They're out working every single weekend too. And it's nice to be home and do it at the Apex. It makes life a little bit easier, but still, like, I mean, look at the events for 2022. We're talking about traveling the world again. There's events on the books for Rio. There's events on the books for London. We're talking about going to Columbus and Houston and all these other places. Like, they need a break. Like, now we're going to start traveling again, like, on a more consistent basis. I don't think it's going to happen, by the way. I think we're going to be right back at the Apex doing what we did this year, especially with the way sports looks right now and the way the world looks right now and this new variant of COVID-19. If the UFC can still find a way to travel, I think they will, but I think some of these international markets are going to be like, nah, we'll wait. We don't, no rush to get the UFC here. We'll just go to Vegas or go to Fight Island. They have places to go. There's no need to rush out these things. I kind of wish they kind of kept these things to themselves, especially with the way the world looks right now. But yeah, this is where we're at. This is where we're at. So, and this is where we're at, AK. We're done with this. There's still other questions, but a lot of these are prediction questions.
Yes.
So, perfect segue. The next two episodes are going to be prediction episodes. Next week, a little less. Next week's just going to be more of a confidence lowering because AK and I...
Oh, no.
We are going to go through all of our picks.
Mike, no.
For 2021, and nobody, we're going to see this. How we did.
Nobody wants this.
Oh, they do want to see it. Because some of the questions, I had to go back when I was flying to Tampa for Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley. I was like, oh, man, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend the next hour and 20 minutes. I'm going to listen to that episode. And I'm sitting there on a plane with, like, my elbows at my ribs because I didn't have a ton of room. And I'm trying to write this down in a notebook, like, all the questions and the answers. So you're going to – the reveals, we're going to see how our spicy hot takes did. And I'm going to throw this out there, AK, a little spoiler. My spicy hot take got laughed at by everybody, as it should have been, because it's not a spicy hot take if it doesn't. But I may have been right. I may have been correct with my spicy hot take. So we'll see how you think, how you feel about that, how the listeners feel about that. So the first half of our predictions extravaganza for 2022, we're going to go back to 2021, see how we did. And then the following week, that's when our official prediction show happens. We will talk champions. We will talk crazy questions. And if you guys want to submit questions as well, because a lot of these were your crazy questions, however you submit to the Otno forum, do the same thing. You can even submit. I'm going to throw out my email right now. I don't think I've ever done this in the history of the show. Michael.Heck@voxmedia.com. You can submit them that way. Sometimes I like to take your, because you, a lot of you have tremendous ideas. We just find a way to word it a little more compellingly, if you will. We're adding another way to that. So if you got prediction questions, send them on. AK and I will weigh them all out. We'll talk about who will be the champions in the UFC at the end of the year and all these other crazy questions. So until then, AK, any final words for the listeners heading into this this final week of 2021?
I mean, I hope everyone's having a good holidays, whatever it is you celebrate or choose not to celebrate. It has been, like I said, we got a couple more episodes coming up, but man, it's never too early to take stock of how things have gone. And you guys have helped this podcast, I feel like, grow so much over the past year. And it's been so much fun. I say it all the time, to get to recording this with my best friend is my favorite part of Fight Week. It is such a nice capper. It's such a nice way to end it. And to have you guys, to have the listeners also take part in it and be so enthusiastic, it just, it fills my heart, Mike. It fills my heart. And I'm really looking forward to doing this 50 something more times in 2022.
Yes, it has been a true joy to host the show along you. And this is, now I'm looking at it, this is the last show of 2021. This is the very last one.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
Yes. So, wow.
Okay.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, last show, 2021. 2022, back at it with the prediction shows. And then I think after that, it's on to the UFC. I think Giga Chikadze versus Calvin Kattar will be coming up on January 15th. So, there we go. We're going to have a lot of fun. So, send those predictions in. But until then, everybody, for AK, I am Mike Heck. Always remember, never take this stuff too seriously. It's all meant to be fun, and we'll have more fun. Well, it might not even be that fun next week, looking back at our predictions right here on to the next one, the podcast.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.